What's poppin', part two, people? Oh, yeah. We're rocking and rolling on a Sunday night, as much as you can rock and roll on a Sunday night. We're just going to launch through some email just to show you that it's not all shitty. In fact, it's pretty nice for the most part. People,
yours,
mentioning that, well, when we go through yours on maybe another occasion.
I'm just kidding.
Mine's, and by
not,
the way,
mine's not that bad.
Send your tech talk to Jay. If you're having trouble finding something, or something isn't working on the site, or you didn't get an episode.
Yeah, when I'm allegedly in, Meyer at Northville, which that was not me, sorry.
Jay's getting a little too famous. People know what he looks like now. At least you 25,000 people do. No, I've had a few emails, I swear to God, people go, hey, I saw Jay at blah, blah, blah. Because you're so tall, I think you just stick out a little bit. Yeah, the mullet, that'll help.
Here's a fun email that ties in merchandise as well.
Hey.
It's from Jason. Hey, I was wondering if there's going to be a Drew Mike Podcast Merkin available for purchase. I have a nice cut, so I like to keep it clean shaven down there for the ladies. But it'd be nice to have a Merkin to show my support when I want to go full bush.
Oh, God. Oh, Lordy.
Where do you put the logo on a Merkin, really?
Somehow, it's funny, there's so many merchandise things available where I just go, boy, would that thing be a bomb.
I know.
I'm just stunned at some of the stuff people sell. I mean, we have a lot of options, but I just don't get it. Hat, shirt, hoodie.
I can understand why people want a coffee mug. That's fine.
Coffee mug. If there's something that you think would really be good, I mean, we can make just damn near anything for the next round
shot
of
glass.
Stuff. Shot glass. That's another one. You'd sell five of them.
Yeah.
We had a real flurry of orders over the holidays. I mean, a ton of shirts. I thought we'd sell more, though. Actually, I knew we'd sell a ton. It wasn't quite the ton I thought it would be. I know it sounds like I'm always complaining because I'm trying to get our donations to hit somewhere around 10%, and we're only around. We must be up about 5 now, right?
Yeah, got to
be. Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. It's a really short purchasing space. We do have Cyber Monday left.
Yeah, Cyber Monday, we'll do well on Cyber Monday.
This is only our second podcast since they went on sale. So if you're not on Facebook, I don't know how you would know about it unless you were listening.
And the last podcast of the week is always the least listened to because people listen to it on the weekend, and if they got something going on, I think they just pass on it or maybe they catch it much later. So, yeah, you're right. A lot of people probably don't know about it. But a couple things I wanted to
at least
to bring
up. That's what I'm telling myself.
Of course. We have so much ground to cover because we have had the holidays off, but one thing that you and I both have done, and I hope you didn't regret it, because I mentioned that I had seen the documentary Gleason, and then you saw it a couple days later, and I thought, oh, I hope he liked it, because you know, obviously you probably wouldn't have watched it if I had said something. Well, did you find it worthwhile?
I was dying to watch it. I don't know if you remember when that trailer came out. I just didn't know it was available now, so I got excited when you told me that you saw it. It's a good documentary. It's tough. It's about Steve Gleason, the Saints player who blocked the kick in the first game back to the New Orleans Superdome after Hurricane Katrina. You know, they made a statue of him out there. And a few years after, actually like 2 years after he left football, he was diagnosed with ALS, which has got to be the worst disease there is there, where you...
Has to be.
Your muscle, the nerves in your muscle just don't connect to your brain anymore, but all your cognition is there.
Exactly. And that, to me, is the part that is so hard about watching a thing, is knowing this guy's brain is going 110%. Probably even more because he's lost his other abilities. And here he can't move a freaking muscle. He can't do a damn thing. And he just can talk through that machine deal, which he does through eye recognition.
Yep.
Oh.
And you know that this is the other terrible thing about that disease. You know it's going to kill you. There's no cure. And you know it's going to be a terrible, terrible end, really, because you end up not being able to breathe.
Some people are living surprisingly long with that. In fact,
he's
outlived.
Yeah.
I'm sure he gets the best care.
Well, at one point, you know, he's got to have a trach and be put on a respirator, which I guess 95% of ALS patients turn that down because of the cost and the 24/7 care you need.
But it's over. If you turn that down, it's over, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when he gets that's the first time I think I saw his wife really bawling. I mean, that tough woman, what a strong
person unbelievable.
She is.
And the documentary ended up being a lot more about her than I thought it would be. And it's not just about Steve Gleason having ALS. It's about the fact that she was pregnant when he was diagnosed.
Right.
So he started making all these videos for his kid, which, you know, that I admit I teared up.
If you don't at least fight back tears watching Gleason,
you're not human.
You are, let's see, a sociopath, probably a narcissist. You might have borderline personality.
You know me, I'm a big sap for stuff like that, so it that hit hard. The first part, too, is right in the bat, his dad, who's very religious, takes him to a faith healer, and you could see his wife just knew it was bullshit right off the bat.
Oh, that was horrible.
And I think, I it's not as transparent, but I think Steve kind of knew.
Yeah, I think he knew.
That this is a total joke.
But why wouldn't you try it?
Yeah.
What's to lose?
Yeah, kind of to humor his dad, who it didn't sound like he had the best upbringing. His father just admittedly didn't know how to raise a child. So
barely around for him the whole time he has ALS. You barely see his father.
Yeah, well, I think he lived in Washington and Steve lived down in New Orleans, so I don't know if that's part of the problem.
Don't be afraid to lend a hand. I mean,
no, I know. And Steve interviews him in the beginning and in the end, which those interviews are just those are tough to watch. It's because it's a guy, a man at an old age realizing that I wasn't the best father. You know, and my child's going to die. It's just wild. So he goes to the faith healer, and the faith healer's like, basically plagiarizes the REM song, "It's the End of the World," and makes these people chant. And he's like, "All right, you're healed." So Gleason's like, "Okay, I'm gonna try and run." And he goes up to the front of the stage, which I think probably took this bullshit faith healer by surprise. And he tries to run, and he makes it about four steps and just falls flat on his face.
But the faith healer tries to say that he wouldn't have run that far.
Yeah, he said, "Hey, you made it four steps." What a jerk.
Oh, God, that's just sick.
And his
fucking
wife,
charlatans.
Yeah, and his wife, Michelle, ends up getting into an argument with his dad about it, just saying that this is all BS. Why are we doing this? This is a waste of time. This doesn't help him in any way.
That was horrible. But, you know, just seeing this guy go from this really vital, because he's one of these guys that just, he lived life, man. He lived.
Hard, yeah.
And not just hard, but, I mean, he did stuff. He was a gregarious guy. He had lots of friends. He was just the kind of person you want to be around. It's, you know, I'm not going to say like Tim Tebow, if you're in a room for 10 minutes with Steve Gleason, you become a better person. Mm-hmm. But he's just a guy you like to be around. He just was a lot of fun. He was good sense of humor. And
there were some funny moments. Like when his dad was trying to feed him, he's like, "Hey, and the dad goes, "Hey, do your taste buds still work?" Gleason's just like, "Yes, this is a muscle." He's trying to explain that these are muscles, not nerves. You know, not
to think
feel.
That his father is not read up on this thing.
Yeah.
I know, it's just, oh.
But it's funny how the other two people in the room are just laughing at that.
Yeah, but they're laughing hard, too. I mean, they're really laughing. They're blown away.
There's another awkwardly horrific scene, and he just has an amazing sense of humor about it. And he goes in for a stem cell treatment, which ends up having an adverse effect and speeds up the ALS to the point where he can't control his bowels. So he was constipated.
Yeah.
And they're trying to relieve him, and they had to bring in a nurse, you know, to relieve him, and he's on the toilet, bent over, and she's doing her job, and he goes, "So, you know," and he can't, you know, he's having trouble speaking, but he's like, "So am I the hottest guy you've ever ass fingered?" to the nurse while she's doing it. Which, you know, he keeps a sense of humor about it. It's going on. It's crazy.
It was amazing. He was...
And everybody laughed. You know, everybody in the room laughed.
Yeah. He had a couple other gems in that same sequence there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I noticed that as his speech started to really falter, it got really dark.
It was dark.
I mean, that's what I mean. It was such a stark subject and such a stark story. I mean, how could it not? And I'm glad they left a lot of that stuff in.
They left, you know, the arguments with him and his wife.
Which were painful.
Oh, they were awful. Oh.
I mean, that's, if I wanted to bawl my eyes out, that was when I'd say I felt the most like, Jesus Christ, if I don't watch it, I'm going to be bawling, because it was just so painful. You got his son sitting in a high chair. Mm-hmm. He's just a baby, maybe a year old, can't walk yet. And there's Steve in like a bigger chair. It's like a lazy boy, but he ain't getting up. He can't walk. He can't talk. And they're both sitting there. The TV's in front of him. Michelle's running around attending to both of them, essentially. Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's like she's got two babies. And he gets angry because he says that she doesn't care about him anymore. She's walked by him 10 times and she hasn't even looked at him.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, that's all this guy has to live for is whether his wife still looks at him when she walks by, you know, with that glint in her eye, as opposed to seeing him as, you know,
well,
the thing that has to be fed and kept alive. And
I'm going to offer a serious issue, shallow thought from this documentary.
There are a million of them in this documentary.
So when he's having trouble, his wife calls in this guy to come caretake. His name is Blair. He's got long blonde hair.
Yep.
Very ripped, very funny guy. Turns out she babysat him when he was a little kid and told him to quit your job and get up here. I'm going to kick you in the dick. That was a quote from her to him.
Uh-huh.
So as it went on, and he's a very likable guy, the caretaker, I couldn't help but think, those two banging?
I'm ashamed to say I wanted.
Did you think that too?
I wanted the same thing.
Well,
and it would have been very hard.
In the credits, though, they show they had other extra footage in the credits, and they show his wedding to another chick.
Doesn't mean they didn't bang.
Wow, I know, but I assume the timeline was he would be banging this chick that he married.
I hope nothing happened there, but I don't know. And I don't even know if I would. God, how could you? You know, till death do us part. That's what I kept thinking about after that movie. Till death do us part. If he lived another 20 years like that, which he's alive now.
I think that just becomes. Yeah, he is alive now. He's still alive. I think it just becomes the focus of your life.
Did you know,
changes things like that, though.
What's that?
Well, them having a child together changed a lot of that.
Did you wonder, though, how long would you want to be alive?
If I was him?
Yeah.
I'm a pretty weak person, so I probably would have called Kevorkian. Or Kevorkian's whoever picked up his job now that he's dead. That's why a lot of ALS patients want to do that, want to, you know,
suicide. I don't think I could blame them at a certain point. You know, when that. I keep going back to that night that he got angry with her because she was finishing his sentences, he said. In other words, she was tired of waiting for him to, you know, eyeball all the letters and get the sentence out. She would just finish the sentence for him.
She is an incredibly patient person.
She was. But I understood what he was saying, too, that, you know, I can't even, you know, you can't even wait for my full sentence to get out. You just want to finish it and be done with me. And then... She's not.
I know, but come on. She probably knew where those sentences were going, right?
Yeah. But, you know, here's the thing that was really strange about that part is that I did not see the loving caretaker anymore. She just seemed like the caretaker who was overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah. And she was. She admitted it. She admitted it in the one-on-one interview. And they knew they were drifting because at the same time, he's trying to get his foundation off.
Right.
It's a fascinating documentary on, like, just people in general and how you deal with a tragedy like that.
And those people are, they're amazing. I mean, A+ to both of them, although they certainly had, some really trying parts, but wow. If you don't think about Till Death Do Us Part when you watch that movie, then you, I don't know.
Well, there was another part too that I just found kind of bizarre with the way, you know, the way life works. When he comes back to the Superdome and he was the honorary captain.
Yeah.
Did you notice who was the other captain in the actual game? Drew Brees was one. The other one was Will Smith, who was just murdered. Will Smith died before Steve Gleason.
Oh. And
it's just bizarre.
Right.
Like when I saw that, I'm like, oh my gosh, that in that moment right there, who would think that that guy would be dead before the guy with ALS?
Unbelievable.
And that's a wild story, too. It sounds like Will Smith's a little more at fault than people wanted to believe at first.
Explain the story.
He's the guy that was shot down in New Orleans. There was the incident with the car. He hit somebody and then left, and another guy chased after him, and there was a confrontation out there, and the guy behind him pulled out the gun and shot him. But the argument is whether or not Will Smith had his gun out. And a lot of the witnesses feel that way, and immediately the media painted the shooter as a thug.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way the narrative had gone before it even ever went to court. I don't know where it stands now or when. SI had a big article on it about 2 months ago.
You know, it was I thought one of the coolest things about the documentary Gleason was that, first of all, Pearl Jam. He was a huge Pearl Jam fan.
He made Eddie Vedder cry.
I know. It's really funny.
It's a really good question.
Those guys are the coolest guys.
I know.
They were so nice and so real. And he did an interview with Eddie for... I don't know what was the interview for? Was it for a?
Pearl Jam had a new album out, so that's why he interviewed them. But I think it was also for his foundation because MacReady does a lot of work with his foundation.
Anyway, the way he lit up when those guys were around.
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing to me. I never saw that look in his face from, like I said, the time when he lost his ability to walk and he lost his
ability to speak.
Yeah, I lost his ability to speak. I never really saw him smile hardly the rest of the documentary, and there was a lot of time in there. But when Eddie was around or McCready was around, he just had he was smiling, his eyes were more open, he just lit up, and it was just the power of music is unbelievable. And if anything proved it, it's that right there. Just that this was something, I'm sure one of the things high on the list that keeps Steve Gleason going.
Yep. Oh, it's a rough documentary, though.
It is. It's powerful, though. It's great. It's great. It's great. I thought it was worth every second of it. You'll talk about it afterwards. I'm going to do that.
After you stop crying, you will cry.
So.
I challenge you to not cry. Jay, you go watch it and try to not cry.
Yeah, we should sit with a room full of people and. Well, that'd be an interesting contest, wouldn't it?
Although the more people that are around, though, there's enough distractions that
yeah,
it doesn't
yeah.
get as heavy.
People start cracking up and stuff.
Yeah. That's me watching it.
Rocky. Donations are 5.25%, so we're shooting for another 4.75. Since I've given up on 15%.
We're just a little bit shy of our goal of $7 million.
Yes. I said 10 to 15. I really was hoping for 15%, but 10% would still be...
Someone's going to believe that.
Still, I know. Somebody's going to think, oh, those fuckers are getting rich off us! Assholes!
It's nowhere near that.
No, we would not have paid for equipment yet if we did it that way, but it's still, you know, it's a nice... It's going to help us. It's going to keep us going, hopefully. If things pan out the way I think they will in 2017, we'll see. It's helping. Believe me, it's helping. Those of you who have do not think that your donations are for naught. By all means, that was a big boost to write a few checks last week. Mm-hmm. Moving on to Castro, which led to
Castro.
Yeah, hey Castro, give me 20. Mark reminded me that we have Donato the Fisherman's phone number.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that found Elian Gonzalez.
Would have been about, what?
Rescued him.
Would have been 21, 22 years ago. It was around Thanksgiving.
95, 96?
Yeah.
That's 95, right.
95, so probably 22 years. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a grown man. He's a big dude now.
I know. They showed him on state TV talking about Fidel Castro. I'm like, he's really tall. Because he's like Joey, Trudy's Joey. Where I thought he'd be the same age forever. Like on that mural with the dolphin. Dumbest mural ever.
The worst. Anyway, Donato, we talked to him a couple years ago on the anniversary, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a 20 year or something.
Yeah, it would have been.
He was really nice. He's still.
He's when a this goofball. Happened,
he loved the attention.
He did.
Absolutely loved it. He loved that we called him, too, because we thought it was going to be one of these things where he'd probably hang up on us. But he was delighted to have a media operation that was interested in him. He didn't care where or who it was. We couldn't get him off the phone.
He's in one of the most famous pictures of that decade.
Yeah, the National Guard guy holding the machine gun up, and Elian is in the closet with Maris Lace.
No, with Donato,
that's right. Donato, exactly.
He's holding him, and that's when he recounts the story. He's like, give me the boy, give me the boy. help me.
Those Maris Lace drops
are the best.
If he does not see me when he wakes up, he will cry.
What? Really? Well, like, hey, you better get him home to his dad then. That sounds like he's not being raised in the right environment.
She had a million of those, though. They were so funny, and her voice was always cracking. But anyway.
My God, that made the U.S. look so stupid, that whole argument and fight.
Yeah, it was a mess. It reminded me of Madonna taking that kid when she went and says, I want that kid. I'm Madonna. He's mine. It's like, no, her father wants a child. Yeah, but I'm Madonna, so.
It's funny, as bad of a guy as Castro was, the U.S. Kind of helped him out with his image in his own country. You know, trying to kill him like six times and failing. The Bay of Pigs failing.
Bay of Pigs, yeah.
You know, if I am failing. Asleep and I wake up and he doesn't see me, he cries.
Turning away the end of the Mariel boat lift, failing. I mean, everything helped Castro.
Any more of the Maris Lacy?
Eyes of his people.
They're all hilarious.
I cannot believe.
Just let it rip.
I can't believe the government broke Elian's bed.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's just the worst thing ever.
They broke Elliot's bed. What were the other ones? There were about six or seven of them.
Something about does he have something about rashes or I don't even remember.
No, we'll probably.
Can somebody get Maris Slasis to comment?
Yeah, I wonder where Maris Slasis is.
I don't know.
She's she's in Little Havana, probably, right?
I would think so. One of the fun things to come out about Fidel Castro, or at least that I didn't know that I've read, it doesn't surprise me. But reading up on him this weekend is, man, did he enjoy pussy?
Oh, really? How much pussy was he getting?
Tons.
I'm not surprised.
In young college age, one, two. There was a,
what? Even when he was ancient?
There's a story. Yeah, even. Well, I don't know about how ancient, but yeah, he had chicks galore back in the day. And there was one story about the lady who the U.S. tried to turn to kill him. And then when she goes in to kill him, she ends up sleeping with him instead.
What? Yes. Really? Yes. Some hot agent we sent down there?
Well, no, she was his girlfriend, and he knocked her up and had her knocked out and aborted. Nice guy, right? And then that's when the U.S. flipped her, and she's like, okay, I'll kill him. And then she gets there and decides to put out for him instead.
Slut.
But she said that he had mistresses all over the place.
Well, he had a law degree. He had a doctorate in something.
He grew up rich. Fidel Castro came from a really rich family. He was a lawyer. I mean, that's the thing.
Well, didn't he grow up a farmer with a farming family?
I think they had a plantation. They were very affluent. I would assume a sugar plantation, became a lawyer.
But he went to prison. He tried to coup in 52 or 53, I think. Ended up thrown in jail, but got amnesty in 55.
Moved to the mountains. Then the rebellion worked, which, you know,
59.
Which was pretty good. The people loved it, obviously, because the previous leader was just corrupt. And then, you know, just like any old dictator, you get in power, like, hey, it's pretty sweet. I'm just going to kill all my enemies and everything will be okay.
Yeah, signs up with the Soviet Union, although he initially said it would be a democracy, which was bullshit. Anybody who was wealthy basically lost everything. He ran off the mob, too. The mob had all those casinos down there.
Yep.
Took over. That was the ballsiest thing. How did this guy stay alive? How did he not get taken out by somebody?
The CIA tried to...
You can't fuck with the mob like that. All those casinos.
The CIA, I know.
The mob would be what I would be afraid of. I mean, they were making money hand over fist with those casinos down there.
There's one thing I know about the mafia. It's that they're pretty resourceful. We'll move on to the next thing.
Well, that may well be the case. Bay of Pigs is, a total failure. But the Cuban Missile Crisis, that's probably the closest we came to nuclear war was over this fucker in Cuba.
Yeah, well, being friends with the Russians, which he had to be because of embargoes.
Yeah, well, he wanted to be.
But then the USSR collapsed.
He was a socialist communist.
Yeah, of course.
So he had to sign up with somebody. But anyway, should we just go ahead and call?
Yeah.
You know? Why not?
And see if he has any.
Spend less time on Castro.
Have him eulogize Fidel Castro. Think he'll say anything nice about him?
Oh, I don't know. It's funny when you put people in the position of giving a eulogy, they tend to get real serious real fast.
To that point, you know, there's all these celebrations in Little Havana down in Miami. And a couple interviews I saw, the people are like, well, I'm not celebrating the death of a person, but...
No, it's the end of...
It's like, you're celebrating his death, which is fine because he killed plenty of people.
No, he celebrated killing people.
Yeah, he's a brutal dick.
Killed his opposition. And Colin Kaepernick wearing a Castro and Che Guevara t-shirt, apparently. Yeah.
Hello? Donato?
Donato.
Hello?
Donato! Hey. Yes. It is! Donato the Fisherman!
TM.
Donato?
Hey, may I help you?
Yeah, it's Drew and Mark calling. Remember we called you on our radio show in Detroit a couple years ago?
Oh, yeah.
I believe it was the Ellen anniversary, and we had a nice conversation.
You had a great time.
Don't tell me I'm live on the air.
Of course you are.
Oh, okay.
I knew you'd roll with it. I said, Donato's cool. He'll be happy to hear from us.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not convinced that he's happy.
Are you not happy?
Oh, I am.
Oh, you are. I knew you would be.
I was laying down with my daughter. So.
Oh, man.
Well, we apologize
she
for that.
She has school tomorrow. I have a six-year-old, so you know how that goes.
Oh, well, you know how six-year-olds go. I mean, you have plenty of experience raising a six-year-old.
I know.
From Elian.
Oh, ironic. Elian was about six when that whole thing went down.
How old was Elian?
Yeah, at that time he was six.
Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible.
Have you used anything from your Elian experiences in raising your daughter?
Oh, no, not at all. Okay. I mean, listen, I was fishing when I met him.
That's right.
But as you told us, you're not really a fisherman, even though we called you Donato the Fisherman.
TM.
Right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, but that's so funny that that name stuck. Did you tell many people that you weren't really a fisherman back then, or did you just figure I won't correct them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I after a while, I just, you know, stopped talking about it because, I mean, listen, you weren't going to change the idea that, you know, that's what they heard from the media.
Yeah, the damn media. Terrible.
Instead, you should embrace it. Well, obviously, we're calling because, you know, you can't turn on the TV without seeing your picture again.
Yes, I had the local channel news here tonight. I was surprised, you know what I mean, that really, in my estimation, you know, one thing has nothing to do with the other. But, you know, they tie Elian Gonzalez, you know, the story to Fidel Castro. So,
well, it's one of the biggest stories involving the U.S. and Cuba in recent years. And, yeah, I would have turned on the TV, too, if I thought that something like that would come up. I hope you were recording it. Do you save some of the materials back from the Elian days?
No, not at all.
No, you're such a humble guy.
Well, I mean, you know, I get calls all the time from like different friends of mine, like when the election was coming up, you know, especially, you know, Hillary Clinton was saying something, you know, to the nature of she would never come out and take out, you know, somebody in the middle of the night and toss them back in their country. And then people are saying, oh, yeah, well, your husband did. You know, and then and there goes my picture on the internet, you know. So,
well,
I guess I'll be tied to that picture forever.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, you will not live that down. But really, you were a very sympathetic character in that whole thing. A lot of people really respected what you did. So it was all good, I thought, in terms of your reputation.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but, you know, I don't know how it was like, you know, there in Detroit, but, you know, down here in Florida, it became really political, almost like a real Democrat-Republican type of atmosphere where, you know, if somebody believed in what you were doing, it was good. But if you didn't, I mean, it was bad.
But I thought in Florida you were very much, I mean, weren't people very much in favor of you holding on to Elian down there?
I really don't know. You know, something which is really strange is, you know, when you're on television or you're out there in the fight or the thick of it, so to speak, you really don't know what other people are really thinking.
Yeah, I can imagine that, although, you know, certainly is a lot available on the media and all the news and the news channels. But I'll tell you what, with the death of Castro, we were just talking about it and people were emailing, reminding us, hey, you guys know that Donato the Fisherman guy, and he was a great guest when you had him on last time. You should call him about Castro and see if he can help you eulogize Castro. Maybe give us a little sketch of your feelings about Castro since he did just pass away.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Fidel Castro, man, he was a bad dude. I mean, there ain't no doubt. I mean, I talked to, you know, literally hundreds of people on the streets in those 6 or 7 months when Elian was here, and you heard story after story, especially grown men just crying and telling their story of how they were thrown into political prison, spent 20 years there because they believed in democracy. So, I mean, this guy, he was a really bad guy, and he did a lot of bad things to a lot of good people.
Not to mention taking their money and their property.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, of course, the money, the property. I mean, yeah, but, you know, but even like, the jail time, which a lot of Americans, they don't buy it. Ah, come on, he wouldn't do. I mean, yeah, he was a real dictator, that guy.
Do you imagine if you'd been in Cuba at that time or had if he had the ability to, don't you think he would have hauled you right in there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was saying things that we were kidnapping Elian at the time, holding him hostage. That's one of the reasons I felt like I wouldn't be welcome down there now, because when I was, you know, caught on camera holding Elian, so to speak, right, is that he thought that I was holding the child, you know what I mean, like...
Against his will?
Yes, yeah, you know, and it was like a hostage situation, you know what I mean? So, yeah, they were called the Miami Mafia. You know, things of that nature, which I thought, you know, to be really funny. I mean, the mentality of this guy was crazy.
Do you have interest in going to Cuba? I mean, certainly things will have changed dramatically with the death of Castro. And it's hard to say how soon or, you know, how dramatically, but would you want to go down there?
Oh, absolutely. About a year ago, a little more than a year, about a year and a half ago, I was called by ABC News. They did an interview. I don't know if you've seen that on the air.
No.
Yeah, no, I saw it.
The first exclusive interview, yes. And
besides
they had come
exclusive
to me.
Besides ours, though, right? Because we had an interview.
Yeah, this was the one down. I'm sure this is the one that was down there in Havana. And
oh, I see.
They were talking to him, and they asked if they remembered me.
Yeah.
And things of that nature. And he said yes. And his father also and said that he was, they called me Donatello and said that I was welcome to come down there. But you see, them saying that I was welcome to come there is one thing. But, you know, actually, the people in the government saying that I'm welcome to come there, I think that would be another story.
Would you want.
I have pursued it.
Well, now that Castro's dead, I mean, maybe you can meet up with Elian. Did you see him on TV?
Elian, no, I didn't. Not this time around, I haven't.
He's like really big now, which kind of surprised me.
Oh,
I expect him to stay six forever.
Yeah. Well, I was pretty surprised also. I mean, he's a nice guy, a little bit of a macho guy. When I watched him, he got down and was doing push-ups for the camera. I thought, man, this guy's really something else.
See, that
he's ripped.
That's all of Castro's influence on him.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Probably trying to turn him into a big power-hitting baseball player.
What about Maris Slasis? Have you talked to the Gonzalez family?
No, not at all. I mean, I haven't really. I know a lot of people made jokes and stuff back in those days.
What?
You know,
what? Are you serious about
yeah, Maris Slasis? Yeah, it was
about
always
child custody.
That's ridiculous.
That I was tied, you know, like, hey, were you, you know, with the cousin, all that stuff. I haven't seen her since, actually, that day that happened. I haven't seen her, and that's been, 16 years already.
You haven't seen her in all that time?
No.
She's got a hair design. She's got a hair design place. Maris Slasis' Hair Designs, I think it's called, on 8th Street.
I know she has a place down there in Miami. It's just that, you know, the language was a big barrier for us. I mean,
what?
You know, I'm the American. They were the Hispanics, and nobody was speaking English. Now, she was bilingual, but, I mean, the family wasn't, so.
Barely.
You know, yeah.
Well, I just remember that, I mean, she was so close to Alien. I recall her saying something to the effect that if he woke up and she was not there, that he would cry.
Yeah, immediately.
Well, yeah, because you got to remember that, you know, he watched this, on a more serious note, this kid watched his bomb die at sea, and then, you know, a lot of people lost sight of that. And then all of a sudden, you know, she was in his life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then when he was taken, you know what I mean? Of course, that was the closest thing to his mom was her for those few months that, you know, they were together.
I don't think we've ever talked to you about the actual raid when you were holding Elian and they came in and had the guns, because it sounded like those agents really tore up that house. Did they break things? Did they tear up that house bad?
They broke Elian's bed.
They did?
Didn't they break Elian's bed?
I want to see if he'd say it.
Well, you know, I don't really know. You know, this was a big dispute that went on. I don't know exactly what was busted, what wasn't busted, you know, but...
The bed was broken.
Yeah, I know that, you know, 150 federal armed agents, you know, seized that whole area, came into that home, and, you know, they were on a mission, you know, to find that child.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that when they were coming through and, you know, they were opening doors and they were thrusting and going through the house, that, you know, things got, you know, manhandled, you know what I mean? So I don't know exactly myself to this day, you know, what was broken, what wasn't. All I know is I was on the other end of that gun.
Yeah, it's a powerful picture. And I heard, by the way, I don't think they reimbursed her for that, for the broken bed, or for any of that stuff.
Not at all.
It's terrible. But I'll tell you what, we were going to try and call the hair design place and see if we could. It's probably a little late. Sunday night, yeah. Maybe we'll have to call tomorrow. But I tell you, that was a powerful eulogy you gave for Castro. I appreciate it. It was also right on the money, honest, no holding back. Is there anything else you want to add about Castro before we let you go, Donato?
No, not really. I'm just glad that he's gone.
Yeah.
No,
you know, especially for the people of Miami. You know, a lot of people just wonder, you know, what their story. Hey, their story is, man, he ran them out of town. You know what I mean? That's basically the bottom line. A lot of people, that's why they call them the exiles here. I'm sure that if a lot of them had their choices, not to say that America isn't great, you know, they would have stayed in their own country. But, you know, this is a guy that, you know, ran them out in the middle of the night.
A great message for the people of Miami. Do you have a message for the people of Cuba?
For the people of Cuba. Not really.
We have people in Cuba who listen to the podcast, by the way.
They get them on those little flash drives. I've seen the stories. And then they download
them. Well, you know what the sad part is for some people there in Cuba, I understand that, you know, they've been, you know, kind of carried away with, you know, a lot of people are pro-Castro in Cuba. But for the ones that weren't, man, I'm just, you know, hey, you know, I'm happy that you guys are closer to freedom.
Donato the Fisherman.
Great message.
Donato, thanks so much for the powerful thoughts and the eulogy. And hopefully we'll have some reason to call back again.
Thank you for the time.
All right. Take care. Have a good evening, guys.
Right, thanks brother. So much, Donato.
All right. Bye.
Donato the Fisherman.
Bye-bye.
He's a good dude.
He's a really nice guy.
And it was actually the appropriate eulogy.
It was. No, he was right on.
Although I wish he would have had a better message for the people of Cuba.
That's true. That was not the message was not as powerful as the eulogy.
Have you ever seen how they get the internet in Cuba?
No, I have no idea.
They have these guys, and what they do is they'll drive to the resorts, you know, that Europeans and Canadians that have free Wi-Fi.
A lot of French people down there too.
Yeah, they have free Wi-Fi because that's the only place Wi-Fi really exists. And then they just
At the resorts, of course.
Yeah, so they just sit in their car and download as much like torrents of movies and TVs and videos as they can, go back home, and then put them on like little memory sticks, little USB sticks, and then they sell those. So that's how they get Western TV and everything, because everything else is cut off there. I thought that was pretty ingenious by them.
Well, they're incredibly creative. You know, they can't get new cars down there.
No, I know.
So what they use for car parts, for carburetors and stuff like that, it's all built out of, you know, apples and toilet paper rolls and tin foil. And, I mean, there's like a million MacGyvers there fixing cars.
I know.
the car thing's incredible.
If that embargo ever opens, just think of the sale. Oh, how big is that? Maybe there won't be that many sales. Nobody has money down there anyway.
I don't know how many people are. Oh, do we have some Mars Lasis audio? Oh, my God, Jay, great job. I can't wait to hear this.
They broke into here. They kicked the cameraman, and they threw him here in this sofa, and they threw all of this to the floor.
Not as squeaky as she usually sounds, but pretty close.
Okay, now. They ran here, and they had guns.
She's getting squeakier.
At this point, my father, my uncle, my brother, I, the lawyers, were in this side because they were hitting, banging by the back door.
It's not a bad crib, actually.
They were already in here. So I stood in this door, and I stood like this, please. And they were putting the guns right here. We're going to shoot you. Put your hands up. Give me the damn boy. And I go, please, we're not armed. Don't shoot. Don't do this. Do it for the kid. He's seen a lot. He's seen his mom die. I'll give it to him. Please, I begged him. I'm going to shoot you.
Should have given him instead of some fishermen hiding him in the closet.
TM.
They broke the closet door.
Oh.
They broke Elian's bed.
Jesus. God. It's pretty broken, I will say. I don't think she's exaggerating. I know.
And they broke the door of my mom's room.
I wonder how she segues into if he wakes up and he does not see me, he cries. Because that's coming.
I don't know. Was that this interview? You think it was this interview?
This is where.
Maybe not.
Donato was with Elian.
Oh.
Donato, the fisherman, was holding
TM.
Elian here.
It's weird that they called him that.
Did you lay these? The wife of my cousin.
If he wakes up, is that coming, Jay?
Five-year-old son who also had a gun in his head.
Oh,
I
Donato.
Just ran to him. There he is.
Give him the boy. Give him the boy.
I grabbed him and I ran into this room and Angela was here, which is Mari Lace's mother. And
he's
I don't remember the other case, but I remember Alan Diaz from the Associated Press.
Unbelievable.
I said, Alan, where can we go? And Alan just didn't know what to say. He said, there's nowhere to go, Donato. And they closed the door and they put the lock there, which was normal. These people had guns and we can hear them banging all over the house. And I heard people screaming and screaming. So I stood this far. People said I was in the closet.
As if they were not going to look in the closet.
To protect this little boy. And I was holding him. And Elian was screaming in English, help me, and in one ear, and then he was looking at Angela.
You tell him to shut up.
Que pasa?
That's what happened.
I just held his head like this.
What's going on?
My God, America. Monica, what did you do to this boy? I mean, I held him, and they came in with guns. Now, I don't say they were put on my brain, but the gun was pointed right to me. Give me the boy, give me the boy. And there was a lady with a blanket.
These two are not afraid of a little drama.
Why didn't they Why did they turn him over?
Why is he yelling, letting the kid yell from the closet? They're looking for the kid. They know he's in the house. They're hiding him as if they're not going in that closet. The kid's screaming.
I like that he asked the reporter where to go.
From the AP guy?
Yes. Oh, he's a reporter. He's not supposed to be helping you.
Boy, that guy looks like he wants to shoot him.
Refresh my memory. Why did they not just hand him over at that point? It had been through courts, right?
Because Marslasis didn't want to hand him over. He wanted to live with her.
So stop it. Then why did she tell them, we'll give you the boy?
I know. That whole thing was so ridiculous. His father wanted him. I mean, that generally...
Well, I think people forget...
DNA usually wins.
Well, I think people forget that he was taken from the father. He was kidnapped by the mother.
Right.
The father
who died on the journey.
Exactly. Right. I mean, it'd be a different case if he was like, yeah, no, cool, I wanted to go to America. Or if she had custody of him.
They broke Elian's bed.
Oh, bastard. My God, America, what did you do to this boy?
Those two lines just kill me.
Yeah, I'm part of America. I didn't do anything to him.
Fuck you. I didn't hurt that kid. Nice guy, but that was a little much. Jeez. Easy, Donato. God, that story.
He gave us a nice little update.
Yeah.
Nice little interview.
No, and the eulogy was powerful.
Apparently, he didn't use anything from Elian in raising the six-year-old he has now.
No, it does not appear he picked up anything in that in that whole affair. Yeah, maybe she's on the answering machine. It'd be fun just to hear her voice. It would comfort me just to hear her voice.
Don't you feel like Donato?
When I wake up, I just start crying if I don't see her face.
He just got swept up in that whole wave and was stuck. Right?
Elian?
Donato.
Oh, Donato?
He found Elian, so he was just going to...
He loved it.
I think
Come on,
did.
He
I think
loved
he,
it.
I think he did.
When he said he gave ABC an exclusive interview, I want to say... You did not give anyone an exclusive interview. That means they're the only ones that interviewed you, because if NBC came along, you would have interviewed with them in a second. Come
besides,
on, Donato.
I talked to you numerous times. I forgot that she referred to him in that AP video as Donato the Fisherman. That's how anybody ever referred to him, not just us.
They broke Alien's bed.
She's got Yelp reviews on her Heritage.
Oh, she
Science.
Does.
If you want to check it out, Mark.
Oh, sweet. There's got to be mention of who she is.
What's it called again?
Marislasis is hair design. Yeah, hair but design. Spelling Marislasis is an all-day job. Wait. Is there a message?
Hi, sorry I missed you for an appointment. Please give me your name and number, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Marislasis, this is Drew and Mark from the Drew and Mike Podcast Network, and we were hoping, we just talked to Donato the Fisherman, TM, and we were hoping to talk to you about the death of Castro and the meaning that this might have to the many people in Little Havana and also former Cubans in exile here. We'd love to get your thoughts, and of course we know you from way back, the whole Elian affair. You conducted yourself marvelously, and we really appreciate all that. Anyway, we'd love to talk to you. Again, it's Drew and Mark, and hang on for Jay. He's one of our producers. He's going to leave you the phone number if you could call us back. Thank you, Marislasis.
Bye-bye.
There only appears to be one review.
One review?
Yeah.
What?
Did you find her attractive?
Oddly, I did. Didn't you think she was kind of cute?
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
I wonder why Jay just left. I guess he's leaving her a longer, more respectable message.
I think Jay's...
I don't know.
I don't know. Jay's he's trying to get some time with Marislasis.
I didn't know if someone had called back, like Donato.
Yeah, where can I hear that?
Yeah, where can I hear that?
I feel like
what's the website?
I feel like he's always yelling, but not really yelling.
A woman who was front and center throughout the Elian Gonzalez affair is putting herself back in the spotlight today as she opens her very own salon.
Mm. Must be successful. It's still open.
Yeah, this is back in 2002, so... She's been spending long hours launching a new business, Marislasis Hair Design.
Marislasis Hair Design. I'm going to go there.
Sometimes working until midnight. I'm surprised she wasn't there. She also says, Alien will always be with her. Does not allow memories of the international dispute to consume her. You put that aside. You keep it in your heart.
Here's a fun fact about Castro. You ready?
Yeah.
He only had one cow, and that's where he got all his dairy needs from.
What?
He was so worried about being poisoned. So all his milk,
oh, come on.
Yogurt, ice cream, hey, came from one cow. Each of his kids had their own cow as well.
What? Really? Oh, my God.
Isn't that great?
That's pretty wild. That's, I mean, that's a fun fact.
He had his own ice cream factory for those cows.
His own ice cream factory? How cool would that be to have your own ice cream factory?
He had his own giant Havana estate with rooftop bowling, personal hospital, indoor basketball court.
Nice taking...
Nice man of the people.
Yeah, nice taking everything from every rich person in Cuba and then becoming one yourself, bastard.
He had food flown in from, you know, friendly countries, too, because he was worried about being poisoned. But still...
Oh, that's so fake. He just wanted good food. What a bullshitter.
Let's see if I... He had 9 children by 4 women. Wow. Lovers range from the Italian actress Gina Lolo Brigida.
Well, Lola Brigida?
Yeah.
No Lola way.
Brigida? Gina? Yeah.
Gina? Gina. It's Gina.
Gina Lolo Brigida? I've never heard of her. She's pretty hot, though.
Yeah, she was hot in her day. That was a long time ago.
To an underage nightclub dancer who reported how he smoked continually during sex.
What? What a cocksucker.
Smoked during sex? Of course he's a cocksucker, man. He's a dictator.
What the fuck? Smoking during sex?
His notorious affairs earned him the nickname The Horse.
Oh, please.
That's more state-run media to bring everything he's hung.
The Horse.
You refer to me as The Horse. He had a taste for the young Cuban women of every color and background and half jokingly told a journalist that it was his colossal sex drive that had led him away from the Roman Catholic Church.
His colossal sex drive?
Yeah. He kept his army boots on during sex as well.
Oh, in case he had to run out and battle?
Yeah, so he was smoking.
Yeah, he was in so many battles.
Yeah, you know.
Fake! What a man. Dick.
Let's see if this story has anything else on him. He's banging some cardiologist wife. Nice, nice. Banging some. Oh, knocked her up. Good. No, good job, Castro.
But he's got a big dick.
Oh,
great leader.
I think that's about it. I think those are all the big ones. He's banging this one chick in the 80s.
Wait, what?
Yeah, 1980s.
Oh, I thought you were going to say.
Not in her 80s.
I thought you were saying he was banging a chick in her 80s.
No. I bet he was banging somebody towards the end, don't you think?
Hell yeah.
Or making somebody work on it.
Probably had a Viagra factory next to the bowling alley. Or a Cialis factory. What's the difference between Cialis and Viagra, by the way?
I don't know.
You want to hear about the...
Isn't there another one, too?
Yeah, there's...
I think Cialis, you can take it, and then you get, like, rock hard right away. Or no, you could always get rock hard, but Viagra, you get rock hard right away.
I bet you're banging your roommate that was in the shower.
I love that drop.
So, like, see, wouldn't Cialis...
What was that? Was that from Springer? Yeah. That was a guy, though. He was talking to a guy, and he was saying something about, yeah, when my roommate was in the shower, something happened. And yeah. So the guy just goes, yeah, I bet you're banging that roommate was in the shower.
That was the guy from the audience, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Jerk.
Calling
I
the
bet
guy
you're
gay.
Banging your roommate that was in the shower.
And the crowd loves it.
That's great. You want to hear the OJ story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I'm just going to read it the way they wrote it because it's so funny. The juice is loose. OJ's incontinent, doing hard time in adult diapers.
He's incontinent? No way.
He's wearing
juice is loose.
I know. He's doing hard time in adult diapers.
Ah.
Radar Online can reveal humiliated jailbird OJ Simpson has lost control of bodily functions and must wear adult diapers. Fellow inmates have nicknamed him Stinky.
And they
refuse to share a cell with the foul-smelling wife killer. Can inmates go, I ain't sharing a room with that guy? Do they really have that choice?
The foul-smelling wife killer. I mean, as if the two adjectives kind of work well together.
Stinky. So that's the third nickname in jail, because there was Daddy Juice. There was another one in jail. I can't remember what it was. Another Stinky. Vernon Nelson, who was one of his prison pals, told Radar Online, OJ's incontinent. He shit on himself. I've been with him on several occasions where he had all these incidents. Nelson became pals in the correctional center with the fallen football heroes for 33 years. Let's see, prison. The guards don't hesitate to put Simpson in his place. According to Nelson, Simpson tried to play the fame card in a bit to cut in front of other prisoners during a visit to the prison chapel, but his arrogance blew up in his face. A guard yelled at him angrily on the bullhorn and told him, "Mr. Simpson, get your ass back on the other side of the gate with the other inmates. You're not getting You're not getting any special
play
treatment.
That fame card.
You're not getting any special treatment from me.
No special treatment from me."
He acted out all megaphone parts.
OJ walked back to the other side of the gate, stood next to me, dropped his head, and started sobbing uncontrollably. He tried to hide his tears behind his sunglasses, but a few people still noticed as he wiped them away. The defecation dilemma is the latest string in medical woes for Simpson. The caged 6'1" scumbag has suffered a severe mental decline behind bars. A source close to Simpson thinks the brute has been stricken with brain-ravaging Alzheimer's disease.
Ooh.
The creep even had secret medical tests for a cancerous brain tumor 2 years ago. OJ says his memory is slipping, and he gets painful headaches. He has blurry vision, stutters sometimes, and has trouble hearing what people are saying to him. That's because he's a narcissist who doesn't want to listen to anybody.
Of course.
At times, he feels confused and has unusual bursts of anger and fits of depression, just like when he wasn't in prison.
Yeah, pretty much.
So they're speculating that he suffers from CTE, but the main point is OJ Simpson wearing adult diapers.
You know, I wonder how many guys like him who carried the ball in the NFL 300 times a year for 10, 12 years, how many of those guys would not have CTE?
Oh, I would think most of them do.
It seems like it's just so commonplace if you were in the league for, I mean, even for a lot of college guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Problem is you can't pinpoint where it happened and when it happened.
No, but it just.
No, I know. There's no doubt that they do. But most of them would do it again.
Probably. But, you know, you think of those guys having contact in practice every day back in the day. Whereas now, I mean, what's the average?
They limit it like crazy.
Yeah. I mean, for example, Michigan, how many days would they have contact a week?
God, not many. Not many. One, maybe.
I mean, that's at least they've finally done something about it.
Yeah, but that's, you know, a lot of people say that's why play has suffered, too, because they don't hit and tackle in practice.
No, you do see a lot of sloppy tackling. And
yep.
No doubt. The Thanksgiving Day parade I mentioned on part one was, you know, I usually watch it on Thursday morning because a ton of people watch it. And so, if there's anything that the masses are just watching, I try to at least get a glimpse of it because I figure, well, you know, it's just something we have in common, as dumb as it may be. And local television specials always do huge numbers. I think just because people go, I know that street. I've been to that store.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And the Thanksgiving Day Parade is no exception. And they do. They spend. To think that there are people who spend all year working on this is really.
It's just kind of amazing.
It kind of blows my mind.
I do like when all the people that, you know, it's all hands on deck for Channel 4.
Oh, yeah.
That every person that's on the camera is like, oh, there's no place I'd rather be right now than the Thanksgiving Day parade. And you got to believe at least four are bullshitting.
Oh, my God. You know, if I didn't know better, I would think that people like Chuck Gaetica, Chuck might actually love parades.
Like Carmen might, too, because she gets to sit in that cozy room.
That's true. But they used to be outside every year. And just people like Devin and Bernie. I mean, if you didn't know better, you would think that those guys just love parades. They think they're the coolest things. They wait all year for it. It's like Christmas every year to wake up at 4 o'clock on Thanksgiving morning, go out and broadcast in 40-degree weather. You know, while a few floats come down the street. You know, Art Van's new float. And in fact, the
Briefcase Brigade.
Yeah, the Briefcase Brigade. And they had, I'm trying to think, I don't think Art Van Elslander made it this year, but two of his kids were in the car.
Oh, nice.
They were in a Mustang, the Art Van Mobile. Listen to this story, though. This is about someone, because, you know, we've talked about this many times. Who wants to go to a parade when it's 40 degrees on a day off, when a lot of these people are going to be cooking for hours?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There's football to watch. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to do. Plus, you know, Wednesday night's a big bar night, a big party night. It's like a Friday night, and to think that people get up so early. You have to go early if you want to get a place.
I think those are two different demographics.
Yeah, this is a demographic that would never cross paths with
the
us.
The Wednesday bar night and the Thursday morning parade people, very different demographic.
Some people, of course, just have kids, and they feel they're guilted into, well, my kid has to experience everything that all his classmates are, even though this is a sappy thing that he'll probably grow out of and regret as an adult.
And they'll complain really the whole time they're going down there. It's too cold. When are we leaving?
Something, you know, I guess it's probably just the adults faking them out that something really incredible is coming, when actually it's just a few, I mean, how many really incredible Santa. Floats are there? In the-
Santa.
Okay, yes, Santa. You can always suck kids in with Santa. But listen to this story.
Suck kids in with Santa.
Yeah, Santa's going to fuck you over on Christmas if you don't go to this parade.
I can't wait to use that.
Pretend to have fun.
That's going to be the best.
Bundled up with a soft blanket in a camping chair on the sidewalk, Betty, I'm not going to use her last name. I don't know why. To protect her, I guess. Betty became a magnet for attention as America's Thanksgiving Day parade passed by. The parade and I are the same age, said Betty Evinkster, who celebrates her 90th birthday Monday and was born in 1926, the same year the parade started. Her family held up a sign letting people know, and many people, including one of the parade stars, stopped to greet her at Woodward Temple.
Who's one of the parade stars?
Well, we're going to find that out.
Oh!
We're going to find out what they view as one of the parade stars.
I'm really excited.
Betty made a wish on her 79th birthday that she could spend the 80th at the parade, which she'd seen on TV but never attended despite growing up nearby. The family made it happen, and a tradition was born!
No.
How'd you like to be that member of the family that just thinks this is the biggest bore in this tradition is born now, and there's no stopping Betty? You know,
at least there's somebody in the family that's lobbying. I think this might be the year Grandma shouldn't go to the parade.
It's too cold. It'll kill Grandma.
Yeah,
it's
we don't
cold
want
to die of pneumonia.
We don't want Grandma to get sick.
This is, wait, oh my God. This is her only present she wants with all of her kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids. So they all have to go. They're all stuck.
No.
Because Grandma wants everyone out there.
No, Grandma. Bye, Grandma. Don't you go dying on me now.
Patty, her daughter, said, it's the biggest birthday party she would ever have, or she could ever have.
Oh, wait. Is this her way of getting out of the birthday party?
No, I guess everyone at the parade now thinks it's Betty's birthday party. So it's two things. It's actually the parade and Betty's birthday party.
Betty might think it's the birthday party for her, too.
Well, she may. She's 90 now, so they've been doing this for like 10 years. Clowns threw beads.
Look at her.
Clowns threw beads to Betty, and she put them on.
And she popped her top.
Co-Grand Marshal, no, Betty
well,
doesn't
they're
do things like
beads.
That.
How do you get your beads?
Oh, Betty's, come on, Betty's 90 now.
Stop it.
Co-Grand Marshal Keegan Michael Key, the comedian who grew up in Metro Detroit, leaped out of a Ford Mustang convertible, came to the sidewalk, and posed for a picture with Betty.
Betty is a huge Key and Peele fan.
She's a big
hit.
She
loves their
sketches. And he's a fan of hers. So many people wanted to come and just take their picture with me. I felt like a celebrity.
Oh,
Betty
boy.
Betty said.
Betty.
Three women who had seen her at the parade in previous years thought, wait, no, this didn't happen. This could not have happened. Three women who had seen Betty at the parade in previous years brought her a birthday card? Are you serious?
What? Really?
I don't think so.
Oh, man.
Brought her a birthday card? Are you kidding?
I already knew there were better people than me out in the world. Now I know there's three more.
That's incredible.
That takes unbelievable planning. I hope they bought that birthday card after last year's like Thanksgiving and then kept it. I don't know. I don't know how you would remember just, to do something.
Can you imagine just buying into all this?
Stranger?
It's the greatest event. It's the biggest event of the year for her. It's the only thing she wants.
No.
And, oh boy, these are outsiders buying in.
I'd like to have, well, never mind, go ahead.
This gets incredible. This gets, okay, three, I brought her a birthday card. Betty also got autographs from Key and a Detroit police chaplain. Why would you want a police chaplain's autograph?
What are they signing?
Why would a chaplain be signing something? Doesn't
that
seem weird?
That's a little odd.
The police.
That's really weird.
The police chief always waved and said, I'll see you next year, Betty said.
Oh, nice going, Chief. You can't go over and sign something for her? You got to send the chaplain to do it?
And now the whole family's stuck going back next year, too, because she's got to see the police chief. Asked how she likes the parade, she clapped her white gloves and said, beautiful, beautiful. I've seen my four great-granddaughters in the parade, and I've got a great-grandson that's six today. She said, having just seen the great-grands march by with the marching band. Connor, the great-grandson who turned six, said he likes giving high fives as the parade passes by. About 16 of the relatives were at the parade. They came from all over. Some as far away as Traverse City.
Oh,
boy. From Traverse City, oh, from the brain. On the week of her 79th birthday, Betty had been watching on Channel 4 reporters interviewing parade watchers at the RVs and said that is what she wanted to do the next year. She'd never been to the parade. She was always at home cooking for us kids. That's why she was determined for her 80th. She wanted to go to the parade. It began a 10-year tradition that only included one missed year because health problems kept her at home.
Ooh, well, that's a bummer.
Relief.
Oh, Jesus. I'm sure someone in the family was all there. When she was okay.
She had a stroke in September. She's been living with her as she recovers and unless she's in good spirits. She had a stroke. She's not gone this year. The family could have easily gotten out of it this year.
Well, maybe the family just likes going.
I guess they do. They must dig it. Family members arrived in the RV at... Oh, God, they didn't get an RV. Arrived in the RV at 4 p.m. Wednesday.
What?
To find the lot along Woodward and her temple was already nearly full.
And it what?
Raining most of the day, and they found a spot that by Thursday morning had a big puddle underneath.
Wait, so
no!
People are getting there how many hours?
Wednesday what at 4 in the afternoon.
So
Wednesday at 4 in the afternoon.
17 hours before it starts?
Yes. To get their
what?
Spot.
That's insane!
That's... Can you believe the work involved for a fucking parade?
Oh, boy. Just not, you know... Well,
this is not the Rose Bowl parade. Sorry. It's not. I mean, if you really want to see a parade.
Betty's got her tradition, man.
I know. No, there's no stopping Betty now. Been raining most of the day. They found a spot that by Thursday morning had a big puddle underneath. We kind of dealt with the mud, she said. Next year could be tricky as she and the RVs will no longer be allowed in the area because of developments there. Whoa. But the family intends to keep tradition going. Oh. Meanwhile, she said her husband always stays home and cooks a traditional Thanksgiving meal with plenty of turkey, sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, and more. He gets out of it. How does he get out of it? That's bullshit.
That's the man right there.
Grandpa.
Husband. Way to go, Grandpa. Grandpa knows what's up. He orders all that shit out.
Somebody must be just virtually ready to come to fist cuffs with Grandpa trying to cook to get out of
it. I guarantee at 4:05 he's calling someplace. You got my goddamn turkey ready? All right, I want it here tomorrow at 10 a.m.
If you see another car around here, come back an hour later.
Make sure you call before you come over. All right. I guarantee you, Grandpa's best night of the year is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. We use the house. Oh, well, it's my goddamn self.
Yep, no kids.
Where the family
kids.
Takes over.
After the parade, the relatives pack up the RV and headed for the feast. And the Detroit Lions win would be frosting on the cake for Betty. The Lions came through for her, beating the Vikings 16-13 for Betty.
Oh, well, Betty's happy.
I cannot believe the fucking work that goes into being a parade.
No.
For a family of that size. Just because Betty opened her mouth on her 79th birthday once. This inane tradition is born. And must continue till the end of time, for crying out loud. Because when Betty dies, you're going to have to go to the memorial to Betty.
Oh, man. I'm sure they never thought it'd be a 10-year tradition when they said, okay, you can go for your 80th birthday. They never thought it would go on 10 years.
And I bet you they keep pretty apprised of any health issues as it gets close. And kids maybe shouldn't go out. They're watching the weather 3 weeks ahead of time.
Well, it is pretty cold, though.
For 30-degree weather and snow.
Grandma, you really want to go to the parade this year? It's going to be really cold. It's going to be really wet.
Grandma, you're going to be freezing. There's a giant puddle under the RV.
They've tried every trick in the book. They've pretended the RV doesn't work. I can't get the RV started, Grandma. It's no parade this year.
Yeah, and last year...
What?
I was going to suggest a band of roving rapists or something.
Anything to keep Betty at bay.
Anything to keep Betty at home in the warm weather. Yeah, in the warmth of the
world. Worried about her.
I think we got Grandpa's number.
Oh.
Wait, Betty's husband?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, boy.
Find out what his secret is.
His secret is he says, I'm 89 years old. I ain't doing anything I don't want to do because I'm 89 years old. Good for him.
Wait, so Grandpa and Betty's place?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Tough one.
Well, save it for next Thanksgiving. We'll call her.
Yeah, let's. We'll we don't want to start a tradition. We don't want to keep up.
360 days, we'll call her. Also, remind me to get her a card.
Oh, yeah.
What we call her.
I already got mine.
That's what I can't believe three people in the parade remember to get
brought
her a card.
And then to search for her. They got to. Guys, anyone seen fucking Betty? Jesus.
I got, you know, imagine if you're one of those people that the three people know, you better get a card. They better give cards to everybody in their walk of life.
I know, they're making people look bad.
Yeah.
There was one other story. I don't, won't get into the whole thing, but this story is crazy. It's about these kids from Dearborn who were downtown, yeah. And they were, somebody was working at a Coney Island downtown, and they were waiting for their buddy to get off, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, okay, where's this? I know I got here somewhere. Anyway, they end up seeing someone they knew, some older guy across the street who I guess looked like he was talking to or about to talk to possibly a prostitute. And, oh, here it is. Okay. And let's see. Okay, let's see the officers. Okay. Okay, there was a prostitution sting going on across the street.
Okay.
They saw someone they knew, I guess, who's talking to this girl, and so they were yelling at him to get away from there.
Did they know it was a sting? Or I mean,
it sounds like they did.
Okay.
Although they were teenagers, so I don't know how they knew all this was going on. But
well,
anyway,
maybe they were watching for a while.
The cops come over, and the officers thought the teens were trying to flag down a relative and stop him from approaching as an undercover prostitute outside this. Oh, it was an undercover prostitute at the Caesars Coney Island on Warren in West Detroit. The teens were charged with interfering with police activity, but the charges were later dismissed. They charged these guys with interfering with police activity. In essence, they were accused of stopping prostitution in the making. The officers were out of control. They dispute the teens were trying to deter someone from picking up a prostitute, argues that even if they were, it's not a crime. That's a First Amendment issue. That's their attorney talking. Mm-hmm. But the worst part is the officers drove the kids through neighborhoods at reckless speeds. First of all, they cuffed him and threw him in the cop car, towed their car.
What are they? Wait, what's the charge?
Interfering with a prostitution sting or something like that.
How do you? Okay.
I know. I
mean, isn't the best defense of I know it's a prostitution thing.
The charges were dismissed. But
oh, well, there you go.
I mean, the charge is really, it's very unclear what the charge is. Their attorney is saying, isn't it First Amendment for them to yell? Can't they yell to that guy to, you know, don't talk to that whore?
Of course.
Who's a fake whore, by the way.
Even if it's a real whore, they should be, you know. What,
right. Why can't they advise him against breaking the law? Yeah. What's wrong with that? So anyway, they cuff these kids. They drive them through neighborhoods at reckless speeds without activating emergency lights or sirens. They impounded their car, said it would cost thousands of dollars to get it back. They're obviously trying to scare the shit out of these kids. They're like 17, 18, most of them. It's going to cost you thousands to get your car back. Took a photo of one of the handcuffed boys and broadcast it on the internet on Snapchat.
Really?
And laughed and joked about the arrest. All this happened
what?
Because the officers thought the teens were trying to flag down a relative and stop him from approaching an undercover prostitute outside the Caesars Coney Island on Warren in West Detroit. They were charged with interfering with police activity. They were dismissed, though. It was outrageous, said their attorney. They charged these guys with interfering with police activity. In essence, they were accused of stopping prostitution in the making.
Stopping that prostitution in the making.
The attorney disputes that the teens were trying to deter someone from picking up a prostitute, argues even if they were, it's a First Amendment right. Detroit Police Department declined comment on the lawsuit, which found, according to police report, no force was used in the arrest. There was no video or audio of the incident. Oh, how convenient. They said a team of officers with the 6th Precinct was conducting an undercover prostitution sting. They spotted a group of males sitting in a Chevy Monte Carlo in the parking lot of the Caesars. The males were yelling across the street and waving their arms to get the attention of an older Arabic man who was making his way towards our decoy. The males were yelling, "Don't do it! Don't do it!" The males appeared to be discouraging the old Arabic male from talking with the decoy. This interfered with the police operation, officer wrote. So the teenagers were arrested and their car was taken to a staging area by the takedown. The vehicle was towed by Detroit Auto Tow for impound. The boys were driven around at high speeds, handcuffed, scaring the shit out of them, I guess.
That's ridiculous.
And they were dropped off in the middle of Detroit and told to walk home to Dearborn.
Really?
Yes, which they did. They walked home to Dearborn. Yes.
Well, it should be easy to figure out the timeline of when the car was impounded, when the sting was going on.
Oh, I think they've got, it sounds like they've got a, you know, as far as the case.
Detain somebody and drive them around and then drop them off, though.
I mean, isn't it painfully obvious? They saw some teenagers downtown.
They
thought they would fuck with them a little bit, but to actually tow the car. And by the way, the father of one of the kids, I guess, talked to the tow place, and they did try to charge him a bunch of money. He ended up, I think he said he paid $1,000 to get the car out.
What?
Yeah.
It seems awful.
I mean, we've heard of these. We've heard of many towing scam. I mean, there's that's a
scam.
Bullshit.
There's a scam on Thanksgiving, right? I thought I saw that.
This Thanksgiving? I mean, they've had them in the past.
I thought there was a parking scam this Thanksgiving with those condos right on Woodward. Somebody was saying, no, yeah, you can park here, and charge them to park in the condos. People no, tow these cars away. This is not.
That happens all the time.
It's just not worth it.
Can you see if one of those, is that your shit right there, or is that mine?
That's yours.
Can you just see? I might have thrown the continuation down there. Basically, I think I hit the story pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I remember it reminded me of when I was a teenager. I think I was 17. We were seniors, maybe going to college, and we were driving on Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And there was a cop car about six blocks, probably, I'd say, four or five lights ahead of us with its lights on. Cherries were on, coming towards us. But it was many blocks up. My friend Davis took a left turn in front of the approaching cop, but he was way down there.
Yeah.
So anyway, we drive about four or five blocks, a couple stop signs. All of a sudden, this cop car just comes flying up on us, stops us, and these two cops get out, and they're just like, they're just grabbing people. Get out of the car, just yanking us out of the car. They grabbed Davis, the driver. You turned in front of a police car, blah, blah, blah.
Come on.
They searched the car. Found, I think, two cases of beer in the trunk. None of us were older than 17 or 18.
Yeah. Oops.
Pot on, like, three people.
Yeah.
Pot in the glove box. I just remember seeing all the pot sitting on the hood of the car.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then the funniest thing, though, is that my buddy who was driving said, officer, I think if you look at my license, you'll see that it has two staple holes in it, which means if I get another ticket, I'll lose my license. And they're like just laughing at him.
Oh, man.
They start running down all the things they're going to charge him with. Reckless driving, turning into an emergency vehicle.
What is the point?
They just want to scare the shit out of us. You know what? The first thing they found out what suburb Davis is from, they're like,
Oh,
you're a rich kid from Kenilworth or whatever, wherever Davis was living at that time. And they just went off. And then all of a sudden, you hear something
didn't
really.
Do anything wrong.
No. You hear something on the radio in the car.
Yeah.
And they just stopped, like they froze, and then one of them went back to and said yeah, because you repeat for, you know, whatever. And so you hear it again. It was, I forgot what the call was, but it was something serious. Anyway, they ran over, grabbed the two cases of beer from the hood of the car, threw them over a barbed wire fence, got in the cop car, and drove off.
Wait, what'd they do with the weed?
Nothing. Left it there.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, left it there.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's hilarious.
It was,
I just
except that we lost our beer.
I just hate that you didn't really do anything wrong.
No, we didn't.
Turned in front of
us. I suppose maybe he should have pulled over. I don't know. The car was way in front of us.
Yeah.
Because when,
was it
when we were standing there, you know, against the car, and we're all kind of talking amongst ourselves while they're searching the car.
I thought that car was way far away.
What did we do? And seriously, there were.
They
I don't think anyone really knew what we'd done wrong, and I think my friend Jeff said, I think it's turning in front of an emergency vehicle because that car with the lights on, you know, and it's like, that was way up there.
Do you think it was the same car?
No. Oh, it was not. No, it was not.
It was
a different
car.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, hijinks. Suburban boys having those crazy hijinks in the city of Chicago, and they learned their lesson, let me tell you.
See, I just remember a cop busting us with beer, and he made us pour it out in front of him.
Really?
Yeah, we had to open up each can and pour.
Is that
out.
In Ann Arbor?
Officer Tank, yep.
Wow, how many cans?
Whatever was left of the case. He's like, look, he was a Brooklyn guy, so he's like, I did things way worse when I was a kid. Just pour it out, you can't have it, and just let us go.
Well, I didn't take you to the station and tell you you were going to be under arrest for some kind of a felony and then call your parents and pick you up?
I've never had nothing but great interactions with Ann Arbor's finest, to tell you the truth.
Well, a lot of times in cities like that, they don't want to put these fat records on kids from their high tax paying
parents. I had to go to court once for a noise violation.
Oh, what, you were throwing a party?
I learned a valuable lesson that day, and it's to hide.
Was it your place?
Everybody else hid, yeah.
I'm a cop, you idiot!
Yeah, everybody.
Why didn't you hide?
Because I'm an idiot? I don't know.
What, you just stood there and... I mean, what was the circumstance?
I was sitting on my porch, and it was late, and there was music, and there was a keg sitting on the
Well, it was your place?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, somebody had to be there.
Well, I know, but everybody
else. Everyone hide? They would just walk away? Everybody else. Nobody's home.
My brother lived in that house, too. He's like, yeah, I was hiding upstairs. I saw the whole thing. Jerk.
Oh, he watched you get busted
yeah.
hiding upstairs?
Yeah. It was nothing. It was
the brother that sold you cable?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah. It's easy to hide behind a microphone. Sorry,
whatever. I don't care. I didn't care. It was a valuable lesson. I had to go to court and get a little ticket and whatever.
How old were you?
Let's see. With him, I would have been, when I lived there with him, would have been my junior year of college.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I was still underage.
So you're throwing major parties by then.
They could have got me with possession.
How many people were there at the party?
At that time, oh, God, maybe only like 20 left over. Then we had...
Who complained? You live near regular people?
Oh, we got plenty of complaints. Yeah. We lived on Packard. You know, it's funny.
Oh, near regular people, real people?
Well, most, you know, most of them are college people around there. But it could get pretty loud. We had a cop car run into our house once. That was fun.
Ran into your house?
Uh-huh.
How'd that happen? Car chase?
Yeah, it was a car chase. The cop was not, we found out later, was not supposed to be part of this chase. He joined it. And our house was on Packard, busy street. And there was another street that like ended at Packard that was like across from us. So if we were to cross the street, we'd be walking on the street, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there was a car turning left right in front of our house as the cops are coming up on him. He didn't get out of the way enough. It was winter. The cop swerved to the right to go around this guy that's turning. Jumped the curb.
Oh!
Went across two yards. You know, it was icy, I suppose. And
oh,
just,
man. Oh, it's winter. Okay.
And took our porch out. Thankfully, you know, it was like a weekend night, so thankfully nobody was on it. And, of course, we went out there, like Beavis and Butthead, and just watched them. Like, whoa! Because, you know, it's a car crash. The next thing you know, two ambulances, fire trucks, everybody responds. I mean, they were okay and everything, but they took out the whole porch.
Jeez.
Wow.
So who
repaired the porch?
Young Ho Hung, our landlord.
Sweet.
Young Ho Hung, by the way, best landlord you could have in college, because he'd be like, I need to fix something. Like, okay. He's like, I'd be there Saturday at 3, and he'd come over with like 7 pizzas.
Wow.
He'd just give it to us. Like, all right. And then he would just hang
out.
What
a madman.
He was awesome. Then he'd hang out all day and fix stuff. He was the best.
That's cool.
Young Ho Hung. I still remember his name.
Young Ho Hung.
I don't know why I couldn't forget that name. And Young.
Hung or Young or Dong or. Ah, jeez.
He was the best.
All right. Before we go, this is your last warning. This is the last one we'll be able to give you, because tomorrow's podcast you'll listen to after midnight, more than likely. The mold will be broken.
Mm-hmm.
You may even hear them crashing, being broken during the podcast tomorrow. If this battle continues, this ugly war between us and all people involved in this T-shirt operation, if we can't come to an agreement.
It's quite an operation.
The molds will be broken. The T-shirts will no longer be sold after midnight. No, this run seriously ends at midnight on Monday. Midnight, Monday, as in almost Tuesday. So that's your last chance to buy the black T-shirt, the women's gray with the V-neck, which is that's a great looking shirt. I love that gray.
Yeah.
The hoodie and also the winter cap. There will be other stuff to buy. Don't feel like this is the end of your chance to ever buy stuff from this podcast.
It might be the last chance to buy this stuff.
Maybe. I'd be worried if I were you. I wouldn't take a chance.
I bought mine.
You did? At cost?
Jay got in.
I didn't want to miss out.
Jay!
One of a kind.
That's funny. Like, in my head, I'm like,
Jay's buying it all.
Can we buy something at Costco?
I know. I asked Joe if we could put in a group order together. I don't know if we're going to have if we're going to have time. The pressure's so intense.
Include the phrase at cost. We'll go pick it up.
No, Jay just brought it through the website like everyone else.
Jay.
Sorry.
Jay doesn't like taking special treatment.
I mean, and after Mark modeling this stuff so good on the site, you know.
Well, that was one of my better days.
Yeah, man, you must have really fasted for a couple days.
I did.
Yeah, we're joking
sit-ups.
About modeling for future.
I totally will.
Stuff. Yeah, Mark wants to put on a small T-shirt.
If we hit that $7 million goal, I will model every size shirt.
You guys mentioned that Pat caught me out at dinner tonight.
Yeah, with your boyfriend.
Yeah, exactly. And he mentioned he's got a potential model in mind that might want to model when we have another product line.
You mean a real model?
Yeah.
Besides me?
Where do you find this model?
Well, you and this other model.
Patty Cakes has been pushing this model on me for a while.
Don't is this a dude model?
No.
Okay.
He knows some attractive ladies.
Where's Pat know all these ladies from?
Pat
gets around. I didn't know
Patty Cakes does.
Is that right? Who are these babes?
He showed me pictures. They're very attractive.
Really? Yeah. Are these people around a college campus, perhaps?
You know what? Oh, boy, one of them is. The other one, I don't think. If it's the same two, I'm assuming that I don't know if he showed you. No. But yeah.
No. Well, they might be very attractive to the podcast audience, so that might be a good idea. They might sell us some shirts. Mm-hmm. All right. More to look forward to. Just more for you, the listener. Again, go to DrewAndMikePodcasting.com, the merchandise button. Or, hey, if you're feeling crazy, hit the donate button and you can contribute, hopefully, to the future of this podcast as well. And is there anything else? No, that's about it. We'll be talking about something, hopefully, besides Michigan football tomorrow.
What?
We barely covered the Lions. We didn't cover Aretha today.
Oh, balls. Everybody's covered Aretha. It was 4 days ago.
Well, I think it needs more coverage.
She's still singing it anyway. She'll be done soon.
We will come back to Aretha. I promise. I listened to it twice today because it had been four days since I heard
it. Wow, what'd you do with the other? I mean, that must have taken like 3 hours.
I can't believe she can go that long without eating myself.
Well, she ate her tooth.
Is that tooth? That's not just a minor tooth. It's not like it's a molar.
That anthem was so long, she got so hungry, she ate her tooth.
I don't know what else to eat.
That's officially considered the dance mix version of the national anthem now.
Do you notice the space heater she had, too, by the way, underneath the...
She had space heaters?
Underneath the piano,
kidding?
There's a space heater there.
How long did she think she was going to be out there?
Well, she knew how long she was going to be out there.
I'm going to be out there so long. I need a space heater.
What's your anthem? You do a short anthem.
I do an anthem as long as I want to do that.
You want an anthem about space heaters? You do an anthem about space heaters. Oh, my God. The last 40 seconds. The last line.
Every line was.
The last line took forever. She did the last line. She'd like every word individually. Nothing quite like it. Ever. Well, let's have Aretha take us out. This part's incredible. No, she's not done. Nope.
Is she okay?
Possibly.
Why is that lady screaming? I think she needs help. Wait, you just did that line.
The crowd was cheering wildly, thinking it was over.
There was some really... I told you... Well, you saw it, too. The time of possession stat they showed at halftime. You know, they had the Lions Vikings to read this anthem.
4:35.
There was another funny tweet that was Obama when he first took office and then now and how he aged. It said Obama at the beginning of Aretha's anthem. Obama at the end of Aretha's anthem. Really funny.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right.
See ya.